Welcome to Earth Matters here on Gila Members Community Radio, KURU 89.1 FM, and on Las Cruces Community Radio, KTALLP 101.5 FM. This is Allison Civic, Executive Director of Gila Resources Information Project, a nonprofit advocacy organization that promotes community health by protecting our environment and natural resources. Holloman Air Force Base in Alamogordo wants to expand its F-16 pilot training airspace across southern New Mexico. Although the Air Force acknowledges that current airspace is adequate for F-16 combat training, it would like to add more, enough to support an additional 10,000 training sorties per year for low-level, high-level, supersonic, and nighttime training, along with discharge of 15,000 flares and 15,000 bundles of chaff every year. Holloman's Alternative 2 and 3 would create a 7-million-acre military operations area, or MOA, or MOA, over the Gila region and the Rio Grande Valley from Socorro to Las Cruces. These proposals threaten our quality of life, health and local tourism, retiree and outdoor-based economies by putting our communities, public lands, watersheds, and wildlife at great risk from extreme noise, catastrophic wildfire, and environmental contamination. Holloman has released its draft environmental impact statement and will be holding public hearings on its proposed alternatives starting December 2nd in Socorro, December 3rd in Truth or Consequences, December 4th in Silver City, and December 5th in Las Cruces. With me today to discuss the Holloman proposal are my Earth Matters co-host and director of the Upper Gila Watershed Alliance, Donna Stevens, and Peter Russell. Both Donna and Peter are members of Peaceful Gila Skies, a coalition of business and community leaders, conservation groups, sportsmen, veterans, concerned citizens, united in the goal of protecting the Gila region from military aircraft training. Good morning, Donna and Peter.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here on this chilly morning. Peter, I'm going to start with you. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about why Holloman is proposing to expand its airspace.
Sure, but let me just observe right at the beginning that it's actually Headquarters Air Force that's making this proposal for the benefit of Holloman, and that will come up as an important issue as we go through this. The reason presented is that over the years, Holloman has been changing its mission, the types of planes it's been using. It's been an air base since the Second World War. And over the last 10 years, they've begun training F-16s. And now they have three squadrons on the base. And they'd like to improve the training opportunities. They'd like to provide more efficiencies. They'd like to improve flexibility. And specifically, when they're talking about efficiencies, they're talking about having airspace that can provide for longer flight, and I mean by longer distances for flights as they perform intercept activities, et cetera. And what I mean by flexibility is that a lot of their current military training occurs on White Sands Missile Range, which is actually owned metaphorically or scheduled more realistically by the Army. And so they just want to, make some improvements here.
Yeah, and improvements, but also is it really control too over airspace? They want to be able to have control.
So I think that we'll probably get into this a little bit later, but I think control is an important part of it, and it has to do with the way the issue has been framed and the point of view specifically that the military has about training and interagency cooperation.
Okay, so let's give people a little bit of context. The Holloman Air Force Base has released the draft environmental impact statement for its airspace plans as part of the National Environmental Policy Act, or NEPA. And Donna, what is NEPA and where are we in the process?
So NEPA is a term that you hear conservationists use a lot. It stands for National Environmental Policy Act, and that's one of the best environmental laws we have. It's kind of an early 70s Nixon-era environmental law. And really what NEPA says, in short, in brief, is that any federal agency, including in this case Department of Defense, if they're considering doing some kind of an action or, you know, any kind of a project, that they have to consider the impacts that that project would have on the population, on the citizens, of the residents of the country. And so, and one of the big things that NEPA does is to say that citizens have input, that citizens are part of the process. And so NEPA means that they have these so-called scoping periods where people can provide their public comments on what they think about whatever the proposed project is. And so right now we are in the phase where it's the public comment period, and it started out being a 45-day public comment period. I think we'll talk about this later, but now it's a 90-day public comment period, which gives us, you know, another month and a half to make comments. So that's really good. And so that's where we are now. We're in that phase of the project where it's time for the public to make comments on what they think about this project, what their concerns are with it.
All right. So hopefully on today's show, our listeners will have a better understanding of what Holloman's three alternatives are. And it's a 900-page document. So yes, with all the appendices and everything, it's a lot of material to get through. And Peter and Donna have been part of the process to try and make sense of it all and analyze the DEIS. So Peter, tell us, give us a quick overview of the three alternatives in the proposal. Or actually, I should say four, really, because we have the no action alternative, which is always part of NEPA. So that's the do nothing alternatives. But we're interested. We want to talk today about alternatives one, two, and three.
Okay. So as you mentioned, the baseline for planning the alternatives is 10,000 sorties. And actually, that's been amended to 11,000 sorties, and we'll talk about that a little bit more later, too. But the first alternative is to take an area where Holloman currently trains, the Talon Military Operations Area, which kind of is between El Paso and Carlsbad. And it's a place that's been a military operations training area for more than 40 years. It's trained sometimes as many as 7,000-8,000 planes annually over the Talon MOA. And the proposal specifically is to expand the Talon MOA mostly to the east over the oil fields on the east side of the Pecos. And so that's alternative one. It's a total of 1.5 million acres currently used, another 1 million acres of expansion for 10,000 sorties. Alternative two would look entirely on the west side of the Rio Grande. It would come up into this area, basically from Magdalena to San Simone in Arizona, and from the plains of San Augustine down to south of Silver City. It's an expansion of 7 million acres. And so the scale is dramatically different than what they propose for alternative one. It's still the 11,000 sorties that are proposed. It is an area that really hasn't experienced this kind of military use previously. The third alternative is a combination of one and two. So almost all of the expansion in the eastern part of the state would be kept. All of the expansion in the western part of the state would be kept. And the sortie numbers would be split between them with 60% in the east and 40% here.
Great. All right. So why should we care about Holloman's proposal? What's the big deal?
Well, the big deal is it would be a very big change to what we experience here. F-16s are very loud. You know, a plane flying overhead at 500 feet, which is the proposed lower limit, is 120 decibels. It's as loud as a siren for an emergency vehicle right across the street. So it would be very dramatic change in just the things that we hear in daily life and how often we're startled. And then there are all sorts of other issues, fires, you know, the threat of duds that fall to the ground unignited, fiberglass chaff being distributed, I mean, billions of fibers across the airspace that float hundreds of miles sometimes. So it would really change the character of this place, the dominant sort of feel of the place would change from wildlands, you know, special wildlife area to, oh, it's another military training area.
Yeah, and Donna, Peaceful Gila Skies is working to oppose the proposal, and maybe you can give us, since you're a member of Peaceful Gila Skies, tell us why this group formed, who they are, what they're doing, what's their role.
So, excuse me, Peaceful Gila Skies started a couple of years ago when we first found out about this threat to Southwest New Mexico, and Peaceful Gila Skies is really just kind of an informal coalition of conservation groups, business owners, veterans groups, all kinds of people really who are very concerned about how this proposal would impact our way of life. And so we all came together and started educating ourselves about some of the impacts and how this would really affect us here in Southwest New Mexico. So, for instance, about a year and a half ago, we went around and talked to all these business owners who are very concerned about how having these military trainings over Silver City, surrounding communities, the Gila National Forest, would impact their businesses. And so we really have a wide-ranging coalition of conservation groups and just concerned citizens and business owners.
Yeah, and if people want to find out more information on Peaceful Gila Skies, where can they go?
PeacefulGilaSkies.com
okay,
is the website.
Easy.
Pretty easy, just Peaceful Gila Skies.
Right. And Peter, you were a principal author of something that we called mini reports, right?
Yes.
That really go in depth about a lot of the issues related to the Holloman proposal. Do you just briefly want to tell us what the range of mini reports are?
Well, there's an analysis of flares and what they're composed of and what the consequences might be in terms of fire, in terms of chemical pollution. When a flare lands unexploded on the ground, which is relatively often when you have 15,000 and there's only a 99% efficiency, they're ordnance. They're quite dangerous. I think that chaff, people really don't understand what it is. We'll talk about it a little bit later. But it persists in the environment and breaks down and potentially poses a threat for inhalation, although nobody really knows because it hadn't been analyzed. We've looked at the issue of cumulative effects over time, not only just when you repeatedly drop these things into a single place again and again, decade after decade, but also across larger areas.
All right. So folks want to get more in-depth information on the issues associated with Holloman's proposal, noise, chaff, flares, cumulative effects. There's a whole lot of information at peacefulhelaskies.com. So we'll be right back after this short break, and we'll talk more with Peter Russell and Donna Stevens about the Holloman proposal for expanded airspace for F-16 pilot training. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Earth Matters here on KURU 89.1 FM, Silver City. and KTAL LP 101.5 FM Las Cruces. This is Allison Civic, director of the Gila Resources Information Project. My guests today are my Earth Matters co-host and Upper Gila Watershed Alliance director Donna Stevens and Peter Russell, both members of the Peaceful Gila Skies Coalition, and we're talking about the Holloman Air Force Base proposal to expand its F-16 training airspace over the Gila region. So, Peter and Donna, let's dig in more. Holloman says that its current airspace is adequate, but yet they are proposing to add over 9 million acres of new airspace in southern New Mexico. That's for alternative 2 and 3. What's really going on, Peter?
So, as I mentioned earlier, the environmental impact statement process is being managed by Headquarters Air Force on behalf of Holloman. Holloman has frequently articulated that the Talon alternative is their preferred way to go. It's close to them. People are already used to the kind of training. But Headquarters Air Force is actually engaged in a larger process than just the interests of Holloman. And that's called the SUA, which is Special Use Airspace Optimization Process. And it's a four-step process that will address special use airspace, that's airspace used by the military, throughout the Southwest. The Holloman step is just the first of four. And next will be probably working in northern New Mexico, then in northern Arizona would be step 3, and southern Arizona would be step 4. But it seems that as Headquarter manages this process for Holloman, they're keeping their eye on the big picture. And one of the things that's really important to notice is that in alternative 2 and 3, which are the much larger airspaces, they're proposing to bring F-35s from Davis-Monthan Air Force Base in Arizona. F-35s are a newer plane, a bigger plane, a much more powerful plane, and a significantly louder plane, at least twice as loud as F-16s. So it's not at all clear why F-35s are embedded in a footnote, in a table, in an appendix. But there it is. And one of the issues with the 9 million acre expansion in the west of the Rio Grande is that it would basically link the restricted airspace of White Sands Missile Range with the existing military operations areas that extend to Phoenix, and you would create a consolidated, continuous block of military operations that would extend from the Pecos River to Phoenix, and it would be the largest contiguous airspace for military use in the continental United States, and it would be a tremendous magnet for use beyond what Holloman is proposing today.
So the if people remember the Field of Dreams film, it's the if you build it, they will come phenomenon, right?
Yes.
Right. So also, I just want to note that transients are not something that the Air Force talked about in scoping.
Right.
Wasn't really part of their numbers, right?
Not at all. It's a 10% increase. And in the case of alternatives 2 and 3, it's not just 1,000, it's 1,300 to accommodate those 300 from Davis-Monthan. And by the way, over the last 10 years, Davis-Monthan has been eyeing the airspace over here specifically for expansions, and it was considered in 2012 as a potential bed-down location for F-35s. So clearly there's something kind of behind the scenes that's going on that's not at all clear to any of us. One of the important features about transient aircraft, and we've had a fair amount of experience with that in this area, is that they often don't follow the rules of the particular airspaces they're in. So there's a military, it's called a training route that kind of goes up the Mimbres Valley and through the Gila Cliff Dwellings and up to kind of the vicinity of Gallup and circles back to through the White Sands Missile Range. And over the Gila Wilderness, all flights must be limited to at least 2,000 feet above ground level. Commonly, they're 100 feet. you know, flying through the canyons. More recently in Gila, we had problems with C-130s, big, huge propeller-driven planes flying 100 feet above the river valley, dropping flares on people's houses. And when you complain about these violations of rules and process, no one's responsible. They're from some other place. If you call Hallam and they say, well, we don't know who these planes are. If you call the air base in Arizona, Davis-Monthan, well, we don't know who these are. Or, I mean, some people have said, well, yeah, you know, they're transients. We can't really control them. I mean, it's just a big problem.
But that's not really true, Peter, right? Because to the extent that Holloman would control this airspace, even if you're training from another airspace, you still have to schedule the airspace through the controlling Air Force Base. Is that correct?
That's correct. And I guess the issue is, you know, how much of a priority is it? You know,
right.
I mean, if you're scheduling all these other things and these are other guys and they don't answer to you, yes, you can tell them not to do it, but do they respect that? Do they honor that?
Right. So just as an aside, since we're talking about military jets violating the rules, Peaceful Gila Skies does have a feature at peacefulgilaskies.com in which you can report any kind of military training or flyover, and that reporting function actually goes directly to the Air Force bases. You can hopefully get a response back. Also, we at Peaceful Gila Skies get that information too, so we can follow up. You know, the C-130s, Peter, that you mentioned, they ended up coming from where?
Missouri.
Right. So we found, but it took a while to find that out, right?
It did. And all we got was that they're not doing it. The things you see aren't happening is the official response.
Right. So, okay, back to the Holloman proposal here. So the other thing that when you read the draft environmental impact statement, that's very confusing, and you've touched on this a little bit, Peter, that Holloman is not counting the 9,000 or so sorties that will continue at White Sands Missile Range, McGregor Range, Beak, and Talon. But yet the DEIS purpose and need states that they need to optimize airspace for the 10,000 or so sorties. So are they really doubling the capacity of the airspace? Are we really talking about close to 20,000 sorties a year or what? I mean, it is, there's conflicting information in the draft EIS.
So it's hard to understand. Let me just begin by mentioning that a sortie is not just a flight over you. It is a training practice where they might fly over you six times as they try to intercept another plane that's flying over you six times as well. And it might involve extreme evasion maneuvers, so they suddenly accelerate straight up or to the left or right. So it's much more intrusive than just, you know, a commercial airliner flying from El Paso to Las Vegas.
It's war games in the air,
basically,
essentially,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. And, you know, in fairness, we want people to be trained.
Right.
No problem at all. Alternative One is a place where they train and do lots of practice. It's completely satisfactory to the Air Force, according to the DEIS. It has a very minimal footprint relative to all the other alternatives. It's clearly a place that the Air Force can meet its needs. But specifically, why is it that Wismer and Beak and the other places are not included in their practice? And it's a function of framing, specifically the way they've framed this proposal. So the biggest issue that they have addressed in the beginning of the DEIS, both in the executive summary and in Chapter 2, is that White Sands Missile Range is actually scheduled by the Army, and it has a priority for Army testing, which is mostly missiles. Now, Holloman sometimes has to alter the schedule of their training. They may have to fly to a different part of the White Sands Missile Range. There's 12 different, or more than that, different airspaces available there. they might have to delay it an hour. It's just not clear. The DEIS does not talk about the frequency of interruptions. It doesn't talk about the duration of interruptions. And it doesn't talk about how the conflict in scheduling might be addressed through better, you know, software to manage the scheduling. What in the frame, optimization has come to mean is we want to make places bigger so we can accommodate longer flights. It does not mean that we want to make it more efficient in the way most people would think of efficiency. Oh, we want to, you know, have people cooperate more so that we can coordinate the use and share the use more easily. So bigger is part of the problem, and that excludes Pecos and the Beak, and because those are MOAs that have been in existence for a long time and they've been used for a long time, but they can't really get bigger because they have commercial corridors running on the edges of them. So the DEIS is clear that they will continue to use those airspaces. It's not at all clear whether the number would decline from 9,000 to 8,000, or maybe it would go up to 11, depending on the permutations of training. But they have excluded it entirely from their analysis. And it's just strictly a function of control. We want to be able to control all the airspace. If you could assume that maybe half the use of their current airspace could continue, you wouldn't even need alternative two or alternative three. I mean, it could all be done right there on Talon quite easily at the compromise level that's been proposed. So it's a huge flaw in the study not to include that existing airspace.
So let's talk about Talon. So alternative one, really that alternative one, if you believe that, you know, Holloman needs to have control, improve efficiency, that kind of thing, and alternatives one, two, and three are all equivalent, alternative one really gets the job done with the least footprint and least amount of impact, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, what's interesting about that, and recently I just looked at the FFA rules for the establishment of an MOA, and the first rule on location is that the MOAs should be located to create minimum impact on non-participating aircraft operations.
This is the Federal Aviation Administration, FAA.
The only thing you look at is the effect on civilian aircraft, nothing else. And, you know, so when you look at the Hilo area, it has a huge opportunity for them.
All right. Well, but so just briefly, we've got like 1 minute left, Peter. Then if one gets the job done, two and three with this huge amount of airspace, right? Nine million plus.
Right.
Is this just a big airspace grab and just the few little bit that we have left?
Well, it sure looks that way. And I think the issue boils down to who's running the process. Holloman is the beneficiary of the process. Headquarters Air Force is the actual agency running everything. And if they're looking at a big picture to consolidate airspace throughout southern New Mexico and southern Arizona, seems to be their you know, purpose, their goal.
All right. Well, we're going to be back here after a break and for the second half of our show, and we'll continue our conversation about the Holloman Air Force Base proposed expansion of its airspace for F-16 training with Peter Russell and Donna Stevens. Don't go away. Welcome back to the second half of Earth Matters here on KURU 89.1 FM and KTALLP 101.5 FM Las Cruces. This is Allison Civic, Executive Director of Gila Resources Information Project. And if you're just joining us, I'm talking with my Earth Matters co-host and Upper Gila Watershed Alliance Director Donna Stevens and Peter Russell, both participants in Peaceful Gila Skies that's been working to oppose military aircraft training over the Gila. Holloman Air Force Base has released the draft environmental impact statement for its proposal to expand its F-16 pilot training airspace over the Gila. And before we talk in detail about some of the specific impacts of this proposal, Peter, let's just touch back on the framing issue that we were talking about in the segment before.
So what I mentioned is that the part of the framing for analyzing the DEIS is that Holloman would have to control the airspace and it would have to be able to enlarge the airspace. So what that does is it forces the analysis to overstate the number of sorties that are actually necessary because they can't count in the analysis, those that are already occurring in the airspace, as I just meant. And the other thing it does is it forces the analysis to overstate potentially the amount of land they need for those large airspaces. It kind of pushes the idea that, we could solve the huge environmental harm by just diluting it over a larger area. So the framing, it forces a higher number of sorties and it pushes a larger landscape impacted.
You know, and maybe one thing that we should also mention is the issue of the quote unquote poison pill, too, because we didn't really talk about that in terms of how the alternatives are structured. And Talon, alternative one, has this high airspace called Talon C, right? That's kind of part of in the trajectory or the path of Roswell International Airport and the civil aviation. And maybe you can explain sort of what's happening there with
sure.
that.
Sure. And let me go back to the idea that somehow alternative three represents a compromise between one and two. If you have to do or accommodate 11,000 sorties, that somehow distributing them across the larger area would be reasonable. Everybody suffers a little bit, but not too much. The problem with that idea, and I'll get to the Talon C thing in a second, is that the MOAs are permanent features. They persist a long time. They're very hard to establish for obvious reasons, and when they're there, people use them, even if the owners change. On the other hand, the level of sorties, the flight floors and parameters of flight, those change over time. They're relatively easy to do. So if you're making a compromise based on increasing the amount of land that's going to be impacted by the military with the presumption that at least the harm will be less, that is not a correct assumption because it's very easy to change the numbers and intensities of use. And we've seen that repeatedly over time in all of the MOAs. The Talon C is a little part of the Talon MOA that is on its eastern edge, and it butts up against another MOA that's used by an air base in Texas called the Bronco MOAs. And all of the MOAs can accommodate civilian air traffic. They've figured out how to address it. There are flights, for instance, in the eastern part of the MOA for Talon that go from Roswell down the Midland and beyond. And in the Talon C MOA, there are only 300 sorties every year. It's not very often, you know, on an annual basis that the airspace might be interrupted. And the air route, which runs right along kind of the eastern edge of Talon C MOA, can be coordinated with the Bronco so that the Bronco MOA is turned off when Talon C is used and the planes can just jog slightly to the east. DEIS estimates the delays would be less than 2 minutes, the way things stand in alternative one. In alternative three, as a kind of a nod towards civilian air traffic, they would remove about 170 square nautical miles from the MOA, and it would provide continuous corridor for transport. But it's a modest benefit. And what you could also do is just shave off a couple of miles from the eastern edge of the Bronco, and then you'd always have a continuous MOA with the same size Talon. What happens, though, when you take off that little corner from the Talon CMOA is the entire area now becomes too small for all of the training that they have proposed. And one of the other framing issues in the analysis is that every part of every alternative needs to accommodate every kind of training. So everything has to be big enough to do the biggest training. And when you take that little corner off Talon, it leverages or forces all of the airspace expansion west of the Rio Grande to occur in order to meet the metrics that every alternative has to satisfy every single need. When there's the largest restricted airspace in the country, right at the heart of the Holloman Air Force Base use, over 2 million acres with much larger restricted airspaces around it, and it's not in the analysis.
That's right. Well, so, Peter, let's kind of get down and talk about the potential impacts of the Holloman proposal. So people are really worried about extreme noise and the fact that these fighter jets will be, you know, screaming over our area, the Gila National Forest, the wilderness, and are really going to disturb the peace and quiet of our communities. But yet the draft environmental impact statement for the proposal says that the noise won't be a big deal. Do you agree with that?
No, not at all. The problem is they're using a metric that's not appropriate to a rural area. They're using metrics that were developed in the 70s to look at issues of urban noise, especially around airports. And urban areas begin with a much louder ambient, you know, background sound level. And so the increases that airports provide or create are a problem, and they've actually established a threshold of 65 DNL. And DNL is kind of an average metric of the sound over a 24-hour period, and I'll get to that in a minute. But what they say is that a 65 DNL, that's just a number of decibels, would be too high for people to live under. You couldn't live there. You shouldn't build houses. You shouldn't, you know, you could only have industry in that area, nothing that involves people living. And they take that metric and they apply it to here, or they apply it to the wilderness and say, well, as long as it's not 65 DNL, it's okay. DNL is not really a sound. DNL is an average of sound over a 24-hour period. So, for instance, Donna lives in the boroughs. It's a very quiet area. If I went to her house and stood on her porch and, fired a shotgun five times randomly during the day, maybe a couple of times at night, it'd be very disturbing. It's very loud. But the average is very low because the sound of the shotgun blast would only last a second, and the rest of the time it's quiet. So when you average it, it's not very loud. What DNL is used for is to look at noises in urban places primarily and see Broadway in New York City louder than Pennsylvania Avenue in Washington, D.C. And it's just a statistical way of describing a noise level, and it's not actually a sound you hear. But when a plane flies over your head at 500 feet and you're directly underneath it, it's as loud as a fire engine, you know, right beside you. And if it's flying at 10,000 feet, it's as loud as a train pulling into the engine. I mean, pulling into the station. So
what about supersonic?
Supersonic is more complicated because in addition to the noise, which there's something called an overpressure. So it's a concussion that comes with the noise. So the startle to your body is greater than just the noise itself. And as we all know, sometimes the concussions break windows, they destabilize foundations. A lot of it depends on what the plane's doing. And people don't really understand aircraft noise. You think that, oh, it happened over me, it lasted a second, then it's gone, and that the supersonic thunderclap, you know, as the plane broke the sound barrier, it just happened, then it's gone. But that's not what happens, really. What happens is the sound is pulled behind the aircraft like a wake on a boat in a lake. And so it's not just a dot that occurs, a dot of sound that occurs, you know, in the wilderness or over Silver City. It's this long trail of noise. And so it's got a big effect over a long time for a lot of people. People don't get that.
And let's just sort of say, under alternative two, the low level, 500 above ground level, would occur in the Lobos MOA, right, military operations area, which currently is over Silver City, the mining district, Cliff Gila Valley,
the Pinos Altos.
Pinos Altos.
Right.
And then maybe you could talk about the other levels so people can kind of get a sense of where all this activity is and what that, you know, how that relates to noise.
So the alternative two has the Cato Smitty, which is a big MOA on the plains of San Augustine up around Magdalena, extends south down to Monticello, kind of near to the Elephant Butte Lake, basically. And then a new MOA, the Lobos MOA, is linked to it, and it runs from the from the northeast to the southwest. So, and they have different elevations for those MOAs. The low MOA, which would occur throughout as one layer, would be 500 feet.
The above high, ground level.
Above ground level. And that's a good point. The high MOAs would be basically 12 to 13,000 feet above mean sea level. But because this is a mountainous terrain, you have to look at what elevation you're starting with. So Pinos Altos, which is about 7,000 feet, well, that would just be a 6,000-foot buffer. Or if you're on top of, you know, Hillsborough Peak, it'd be a 2,000-foot you know, buffer. So it's very confusing how all of this stuff is presented, and it's very problematic.
Okay, and let's just cover a couple other issues before the break here, if we can. Peter, TRC, Socorro, and Las Cruces, they're part of this new air traffic control assigned airspace, the Kendra and Krista, right, Atkas. What's the purpose of these? And of course, these were not at all described or included as part of scoping. So this is new. This is the first time we've seen this.
So an ATCA is an air traffic controlled administrative airspace. And basically, it functions like an MOA, but it's temporary. The Federal Aviation Administration turns it on at the request of the military when there is some training taking place. It's higher, 18,000 MSL. So if you're starting at 5,000 feet, really it's, you know, 8,000 feet. And you can't drop flares and chaff there. But the other things can happen there. So you will hear the planes going across if you're living in Socorro. All the planes, all 10,000, flying into the Cato Smitty Lobos MOA or TRC. And the other part about it is that if you, ever like to go out into, say, the San Mateos or the Apache Kid Wilderness, or you want to go into the Black Range and part of the Aldo Leopold, those places will be severely impacted in alternative two at very low levels. And so it's not just where you live. It's like the places you like to visit, the your home range, so to speak.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll come back and talk a little bit more about impacts of the Holloman proposal. And I'm talking with Peter Russell and Donna Stevens of Peaceful Gila Skies. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Earth Matters. This is Allison Civic, Director of Gila Resources Information Project, and my guests this morning are my Earth Matters co-host and Upper Gila Watershed Alliance Director, Donna Stevens, and Peter Russell, both participants in Peaceful Gila Skies. This coalition's been working to oppose military aircraft training over the Gila for the past couple years. And before we talk about how people can engage in this draft environmental impact statement process, Peter, let's just talk. You had another point about noise, and we'll just sort of summarize some of the other impacts that people can be thinking about.
Sure. So I just want to mention that noise is a difficult thing to analyze, and part of the reason is that it has a tremendous emotional content to it. If you live in Alamogordo and your wife is a pilot or is a mechanic on the airbase, then the noise tends not to bother you as much because you see a benefit coming to you. But if you live here in Silver City and you move to this area because of the natural amenities and the quiet, then the noise has a tremendous detriment to you. And that has an economic, you know, reflection too. There's a lot of benefit that comes to Alamogordo from securing a steady source of income through military training in the area. And their economic development plan reflects that. There's no economic benefit that comes to Silver City. This is a sacrifice area so that some economic benefit flows over to Alamogordo. But beyond noise, there's fire. This is a much more vegetated area. It has a history of big fires. And because so much of it is wilderness and roadless, it's really hard to get resources in to extinguish those fires. And interestingly enough, the fires generated by, say, a flare would be the responsibility of local authorities to extinguish. It would not be an Air Force responsibility. The landscape over in the Talon area is quite different. It's largely Chihuahuan desert scrub. In the eastern part, it's largely an industrialized landscape. These are noisy places, both because of historic use of training and because of the industrialized oil fields, you know, going on. So the noise impacts are greater here. The fire impacts are greater here. And you're bringing in new pollutant contaminants, particularly chemicals, in small quantities, but over time they build up. And that's something that's already occurring over in the eastern part of the state. So when you look at the need for military training, let's ensure that our men and women are adequately trained to, you know, fly these planes. There's a perfectly good place to do this, a place they already do it, and that's expressed in Alternative One. And so I think that it's a reasonable thing to say, look, we support the military, we support this training, please do it and in Alternative One.
And one other point, Peter, you know, we've heard a lot of fear about, oh, if you somehow oppose this, then Holloman Air Force Base is going to disappear. That's not really true, right? I mean, they've got two permanently bed down squadrons, a third that, even though it's temporary, they're acting like it's permanent. They're building buildings. They've got the
not
drone.
Not at all. Holloman Air Force Base is a tremendous resource. It does the drone training. It has this access to the largest restricted airspace in the country. It is been presented with a opportunity to make some improvements, and the Alternative One absolutely helps them make those improvements with a minimum of effect on the rest of the area that doesn't necessarily have any kind of economic benefit and, as a matter of fact, suffers.
Okay, so let's, Donna, turn to public hearings that are coming up. So Holloman's holding a second set of public hearings on the draft EIS starting December 2nd in Socorro. Why is it important for people to comment?
Well, it's like I said earlier in the show, NEPA, or National Environmental Policy Act, is one of our very best environmental laws. This is a law that citizens fought for, and we need to use it. So this law says briefly that every federal agency that's planning to do a project must consider the environmental, the social, economic impacts, other impacts as well. And they also have to take public input into consideration. That's one of the big pieces of NEPA. So the Air Force really needs to understand the impacts of the alternatives that they're considering. And the Air Force contractors who are working on this environmental impact statement, or EIS, they don't know this area nearly as well as we do, as the local community does. And so we need to let them know what is so special about this area and what we think we stand to lose. The Air Force is legally obligated to respond to comments that people make and, you know, concerns that the public raises. And so, although you will not get a personal response to your comments, every topic that you raise will be addressed in the final environmental impact statement.
Right, right. So there are going to be four hearings starting Monday, December 2nd. Can you just tell us where those are going to be?
Yes, there's one in Socorro on December 2nd. And there's
where is that going to be?
It's at the Macy Center. That's on the campus.
And all the hearings start at 5:30.
They all start at 5:30. They go till 8:30. And the format is that the first half hour is a poster display, so it's kind of an open house where you can go and talk one-on-one with Air Force representatives. And then starting at 6:00 is a formal presentation by the Air Force. And right after that presentation, there's a long public comment period, so people can get up and make their public comments. Those will all be recorded and be part of the public record, and people can ask questions. And then the meeting that's probably the next meeting is December 3rd in Truth or Consequences at the Commission Chambers on 3rd Street. And probably the most important meeting to people in our area is the Wednesday, December 4th meeting in Silver City. That's at the Grant County Convention Center on Highway 180 East, right next to Ace Hardware.
And then Las Cruces, right? Thursday,
yes,
the 5th.
Yes, and then Las Cruces, yes. Sorry.
To our listeners on KTAL 101.5.
Yes. December 5th in Las Cruces at the Ramada Hotel and Conference Center at 201 East Avenue.
Great. So this really is this proposal is much larger than what we thought it
That's
would be
right.
in scoping. So it's really pulling in the Rio Grande corridor from Socorro down to Las Cruces, as well as us here in the Gila region. So we hope
right.
everybody will come out. So Donna, what makes a good comment, a good public comment? What's the Air Force really looking for?
Yeah, well, federal agencies consider that there's two types of comments. There's substantive and there's non-substantive. So non-substantive are comments that are things like, I don't like this, or what a great idea, let's do it. So this isn't a voting process. So the Air Force can't really do anything with a comment like that. So the substantive comments are what we want people to make. And these are comments that raise issues that can actually be addressed, issues of importance to residents and anyone who cares about Southwest New Mexico. And these issues can include some really important issues that you and Peter talked about earlier in the show: noise, risk of catastrophic wildfires, concerns about health impacts of chaff, threats to wildlife, cultural resources like archaeology sites, Gila cliff dwellings, negative impacts on local businesses and our outdoor recreation economy that depends on tourism, impacts on veterans, especially those veterans who have PTSD and who go into the forest and the wilderness to heal. And there's the public safety issues that Peter mentioned with flares and chaff. There's also a real concern by equestrians that horses will be startled by the sudden loud noise of an F-16, and they can throw their riders, causing injuries and even fatalities. You know, the Gila is a really well-used horseback riding destination. And there's another really huge issue, which is that the Gila Wilderness is the nation's first wilderness. It's a pretty pristine environment with some really remote areas, canyons and mountain ranges, and it's not going to be a very good place to go for peace and quiet and experiencing solitude if there's a F-16 roaring over your head. So these are all really good substantive comments that people can raise.
Right, and where people have data or references, citations, please, they should consider including those in their public comment, because as I think as we heard from the Air Force back in November of 2017, after they had completely skipped over Silver City in scoping, they were like, we had no idea what was here. We didn't even know about Silver City.
Exactly.
So we want to make sure that they are really including things, and really from what we've seen already of the draft EIS, they're not really evaluating things. They're not looking at local economic impact, impacts to tourism, et cetera. So, Donna, where can people find out more information?
People can go to the Peaceful Gila Skies website, and that's peacefulgilaskies.com. You can get all kinds of information about where you can submit your comments and some of the issues that and concerns that you can raise. People can also go to the Air Force website. So the easiest thing to do is just search for Holloman EIS. That's for Environmental Impact Statement. And you'll get the Holloman website where you can submit your comments.
And then just very quickly, the public comment period runs until when? It was extended,
right? Yes, it was extended. So it's a 90-day public comment period, and it goes till January 31st, 2020 now.
Okay, that's great. And where can people can't go to the hearing, where can they submit public comment?
They can submit their public comments via the Peaceful Gila Skies website, or they also can go to the Air Force's website. So Holloman EIS.
All right. So Donna Stevens and Peter Russell, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Allison.
All right. So for more information about the Holloman proposal for expanded F-16 training airspace, visit www.peacefulgilaskies.com. A podcast of today's show and past programs are available in the Earth Matters archive at gmcr.org. Thank you to our audio engineer, Ken Kepler, and we hope you'll join us for next week's edition of Earth Matters here on Gila Members Community Radio, 89.1 FM Silver City, and KTAL LP 101.5 FM Las Cruces.